Good. That's better. Okay. We have 1 hour. It's 2:10, so we'll finish, or after, yeah, 2:10, we'll finish at 3:10. We have two items on our agenda. The first is to relatively quickly look at Article 2 and Article 3. We did receive comments from several of our colleagues in advance, which staff has now distributed. Do you have Mr. Downey's too? Mr. Down, we have Mr. Downs.
And mine's at the bottom.
Oh, yours is at the bottom. Okay, great. So I'd like to quickly, Mr. Yule mentioned to me that he had one that I think somebody else got around in Article 3 around board officers. Is there any other item other than what's in these three notes that we that somebody wants to put on the table very quickly? Otherwise, we'll just work through these fast. Okay, so let's go ahead and we'll start with Mr. Downs' notes. Article 2 in B, Mr. Downs, this is in the area of fiduciary responsibility. Mr. Downs suggests that we consider adding a business plan requirement to the already identified items below that. Any reaction to that? Any concern about adding it at this point? It's adding a business plan requirement. So he's suggesting language to adopt a business plan for the authority. Everybody's all right with that? In addition to the annual budget. Yes, so kind of, yep. Okay, good. So we'll go ahead and add that. In Section D, which is about planning, operations, reporting, and customer service. We have certainly talked about the need for a performance plan for the agent, for the authority, as well as specific performance goals for the CEO and GM. I would note that, that we have a section on the relationship between the CEO and GM that we've not, the CEO and the board, which we've not written yet, and I just assume put that expectation in there, but I, anybody have a thought about adding some language about a performance plan for the agency in the CEO? Okay, let's put that one into that paragraph that we're waiting on.
I think as we get to that point, we'll want to talk about specifically what belongs in a performance plan.
But
the premise is a good one.
Right. Well, and I think the other thing we do need to keep in mind here is these are the bylaws, and and they need to be structured to stand the test of time. And so we don't want to be so specific in the bylaws that we don't give ourselves room to move as the age, as we grow and get better at what we're doing. Article 3 is board officers. This is the issue that Mr. Yule raised with me as well. And we are all aware that some of the reports that we got from outside folks talked about it would be good to have chairman serve for more than 1 year. We are constrained by the compact on writing it like there's multi-year chairman. So I think the suggestion is just to find a way to reference as established in the compact. The chair will be elected annually or, you know, some language. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right, so we'll add that, some kind of reference in the compact. Okay, going now to Mr. Downey's, we'll backtrack just a little bit to the beginning of Article 2. Mr. Downey suggests, and I think this is a good one, the board governs through policies, which is what we have, and then he suggests we add and exercises oversight over policy compliance and results. And I think that is a very elegant statement of the, one of the major other aspects of our job. Anybody have a problem with adding that in? We good? All right. Under B, back at fiduciary responsibility on page 2, he suggests notions of condition of the system and fiscal health of the authority be represented in some manner in here. Are we okay with that idea, and we'll figure out the words later? Is that everybody? I'm looking up and down.
My thought there is those are two things we really do have to worry about as fiduciaries.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll figure out a way to add those ideas. The last line under B, number 7, I think this is a, Mr. Downey says, who do we mean by stakeholders? We say the public and all stakeholders. We have riders, we have jurisdictions, we have relationships with agencies that fund us. Did you have a suggestion, Mr. Downey?
My reason for raising it was to clarify, in my mind, what the relationship is between the board and specific funding jurisdictions, and whether that is exercised by the members from that jurisdiction, or whether the board and the chair, in fact, communicate directly with those jurisdictions. Who fall under the category of stakeholders, but they are very important stakeholders.
I'm also thinking that, we have a section in the bylaws on communication, which we have not had a conversation about yet. And it may be that in that section, as we sort through what our expectations are, that will provide the clarity for 7. So I think let's flag it, but I suspect we may want to come back and revise that, but I think we need to do the other work first. Okay. Article 3, duties of the chair, facilitates work of the board. Number 2, the issue Mr. Downey raises here is who's developing the agenda for, chairman does agenda development for board meetings, not for committee meetings, at least as we are now thinking about it, right? So
the other issue is in my mind is the implication in this section that the chair makes a unilateral decision to bypass committee review, but elsewhere in the procedures it's spelled out that that's a joint decision with the committee chair.
Haven't been here long enough to know what the practice is. I guess we're reliant on other folks here. Do you, Ms. Hutchins?
I think that has been the case, and I thought someplace in here we also referenced the chair's relationship in coordinating
elsewhere in
working. So. Your language then would consult with the committee chairs before moving. It makes a lot of sense to me. I don't think we want the chair to be the overarching of your work.
Okay.
She wouldn't do a great job.
All right, so we will figure out how to add that idea. Everybody's okay with that? Okay. 3A6. Oh. What's the difference between self-evaluation and evaluation of individual board members? We have not talked about this. I've participated in boards where there was board self-evaluation, and as part of that, individual board members reflected on their own practice as opposed to, but there is always an element when you have standards of conduct or other sorts of expectation where the board can say to somebody, really should be coming more often, or whatever. I don't know what the will of the group is on this. We haven't really discussed it in detail.
I noticed and I don't remember the transit agency, that they have a list of things that make up the responsibilities, mm-hmm. such that that helps the self-evaluation part, as well as a way of measuring, and that might be a way to get to that and then distinguish. Well, one becomes the other, actually.
they come together.
They come together.
And as you point out, on other boards, and I've had the same experience, we annually reflect on the effectiveness of the board and our own effectiveness, but we don't comment in that formal sense of what we think how the other people are doing.
It's not a 360, no.
But I think Mr. Downey's point about evaluating the overall effectiveness of the board should be at least an annual item that we take up, and I think that is worthwhile in terms of adding to our bylaws.
So perhaps we just, in number six, we say facilitates self-evaluation of the board, and maybe we leave it there, and we can do this role, we can design another tool around the responsibilities for individual members. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. Three, number eight, and number nine, you just think we should reorder those. Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. And 11C, number 14, develops consensus building. Staff have any help on that one, what that one might have said?
I think the words
are there are some words missing, absolutely. Develops what? Pardon me, Carol? Or a semicolon. Develops consensus, building more board.
Well, I think that's a probably not a formal way of phrasing it. People call it, you know, forward-looking or forward-leaning.
Forward-thinking.
Forward-thinking.
Okay. We'll take a look at that. Thank you for identifying it. Okay. And Mr. Acosta, were these for this section, or were they for some?
It's for a few. It's just it's a placeholder. Okay. I think the point is, and I don't know, for instance, service standards are essentially in the bylaws as the ability to determine the level of service. But I think the issue here is, as the board is, and this is probably at the end of our governance discussion as a committee, at least in this round, that we have to make a commitment to a work program. Mm-hmm. I think one of the bigger issues is that we tend, as a board, to get caught up in minutia. And that the issue here is that we need to have at least review our standing policy documents, whether they're service standards or the business plan that Mr. Downs raised, or the performance standards that we're going to develop for the general manager that we're going to hold our overall authority accountable to. We need to take a look at that and also revise it or come up with a different set of standards, for instance, in terms of service standards, so this board can rightfully discharge its responsibilities as a policy-making body, and that we don't necessarily do that, or haven't been doing it for some time. So I think that's just an issue I'd like to bring
to
up and, you know, to flag.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, in some ways, I think it fits into the next conversation we're going to head into about committees, which is the sort of how do we do our work in an annual cycle and make sure that we're looking at the right issues all the way along. So, if no one else has comments on the board and the chairman responsibilities at this point, we'll do those cleanups that we just identified, put some placeholders in other places, and for all intents and purposes, I'm going to set these two sections aside and say that we have pretty much completed them. When we come back and look at the whole thing, we'll look at them again, but I think we've had a good amount of conversation on this. So I'd like to turn our attention to the section on committees, which is section number 11. And I want to just briefly draw your attention to the chart, which we handed out last month and is attached again, and tell you what this is and why I did it. I went through the language of the committees as it currently exists in our procedures. The chart is back behind the Yeah, it's on, it's item two, I guess, in this lineup. And I basically just lifted the words from the definitions and bulleted them so we could see them a little more easily what the various tasks were. Trying to sort primary responsibilities from other things, and then working with staff, we tried to identify the major documents that each committee deals with, as well as who the lead executive leadership person is that tends to work on this. Again, all in sort of the spirit of trying to get our arms around what the committees are currently doing so that we can ask ourselves the question of whether these are the things we want to be doing or whether there are things that need to be added or we need to reorganize them slightly. So there's one thing that I did do in here, which is we have two subcommittees. I moved them into the other task column of the committee that they're associated with. So you'll see under Finance Administration conducts audits and investigations as needed in other tasks. And somebody remind me now, where does the Mr. McKay, where's the technology subcommittee? It's under customer service. So I oversees technology initiatives of the agency, represents that that task. Mr. Dine.
Recognizing, yeah, that the audit committee is in fact a subcommittee. There still are some very important things that it does on behalf of the entire board that need to be reflected. This is receiving the annual financial report from the outside auditors and communicating with the auditors, assuring that we've met financial standards and the rest. That's a very important responsibility. Normally, you would have an audit committee to do it, but if it's a subcommittee, we still want to know who's doing it.
Go ahead, Ms. Hutchins.
I really think it should rise to a higher level than a subcommittee, even though it is part of a larger financial piece. But I think making it a committee, if in some way to highlight that responsibility, because frequently, or at least when this was first done, I think it was thought of as not a regular responsibility or something that we were going to address for a short period of time or limit the discussions in that. And I think the audit responsibility and the financial tracking all are major responsibilities, I think, that.
Yeah, there is a question of whether an audit committee can be a subcommittee of a finance committee, or whether, in fact, that creates a conflict. I've had that change made in other places.
Mr. McKay?
I would also note that some places, an audit committee will actually bring in outside members beyond those who are members of the board. I'm not suggesting that, but it is an indication of their independence and importance.
It does raise a larger issue about the subcommittees and public accessibility to them, which I know has been an issue that's been raised in the past. I will say the Technology Review Committee oftentimes is talking about matters of procurement, which is one of the reasons why it hasn't been as open to the public. If we are looking at these two committees and thinking to add them, incorporate them back into standing committees and not have subcommittees, then I do think we're going to have longer closed sessions of the entire board. I mean, that's a consequence of doing that. I'm not opposed to doing that, but I think we need to recognize that because I know in particular with technology, before the subcommittee existed, we had long briefings in closed session on technology-related items, and there was not a lot of board understanding about some of the technical components of that, which is going to take time. And maybe with a new board, that's time well spent. But if we do incorporate these back into their larger committees, customer safety and finance and administration, then I do think we need to prepare for longer closed session briefings on those items.
Mr. Downs.
Some boards that I have been on, because
the audit is part of the direct fiduciary responsibility of the entire board. The board meets as a committee of the whole for matters of the annual audit, the management letter, any significant financial vulnerabilities, and then takes action as an audit committee and the committee of the whole to adopt or ask for further guidance, et cetera. Rather than having it be a committee, I share Mr. Downey's concern about audit being a subcommittee of finance, and one of the few options is to make it a committee of the whole.
Mr. Benjamin.
I agree that there is a potential conflict of interest between finance committee and an audit committee. I would suggest that there are, or there have been, in the meetings of the audit and investigations committee, numerous meetings on in-depth financial issues, in the same way as Mr. McKay talked about the technology review committee having numerous meetings on in-depth issues. Those get to be very difficult to do if you make it a full committee of the board, and in particular if it's a committee of the whole. So from a practical point of view, that may be difficult, or you may have to leave out a bunch of things that currently get done. Keep in mind that the Inspector General reports directly to the board and has to be able to talk to somebody. And when you try and schedule the entire board to do that, that's pretty limiting.
So this is partly a scheduling issue, partly a how many of us need to be at the table to really understand. I mean, I'm responding, I guess, to the fiduciary responsibility piece here, which says to me every other board I've been on, even you know, Northern Virginia Transportation Commission, the whole group receives the audit report. The whole group has the conversation, accepts the letter, meets with the auditor, et cetera, et cetera. So I was seemed odd to me to put this into a subcommittee, and no offense meant, but both of these subcommittees are chaired by non-voting members of the board, so that's a whole other level of concern that I have. Mr. Benjamin.
Let me note that all of those actions do occur for the full board. In other words, the full audit is presented to the full finance committee. What happens is the preliminary work that leads up to that is what the subcommittee does. The full audit is the report of the auditor is made directly to the board. All of those things are to the full finance committee. So those things do occur on that level. There's just a lot of other work that's preliminary to that this committee has been doing.
Mr. McKay.
Well, I'm comfortable, you know, folding them both in however we see appropriate, but I would say, you know, our own board has, the Fairfax County Board has an audit committee. It's not a committee of the whole, but the entire board gets the audits and reads them, talks about them, raises issues, and that structure, having a committee, actually works pretty well for vetting things. On the technology front, the main reason why that committee was set up is because we were getting board items that were written in nothing that resembled anything close to English that any of us could understand. And so part of the reason for that is we were spending massive quantities of money on technology, and none of us were IT professionals. And so we worked with the staff to try to improve the communication of the items coming to the board that dealt with technology, but there was no action. It was actually an interface with staff to improve the communication with the board for items coming to the board. I think those two things have improved board function as a whole much better. Maybe we're to the point where they're not necessary anymore, but I would say that, you know, if we are going to eliminate those, which I'm not opposed to, we do need to prepare ourselves for much longer conversations about things that I think are helped by the committee vetting them through a board member's perspective, which I've actually seen on technology review to be a quite administrative task that may not be necessary. But I think it's made the items coming to the board much clearer, much easier to understand than before that committee was in existence.
Madam Chair. Yes, Ms. Hutchins.
I think that point is a very important point, and it, to me, speaks to whether the staff and the CEO's responsibilities are being met. Because if I'm going to come here and tell you that I'm going to be the expert on technology because staff cannot, we're in trouble. Because we, and I think the ability to translate the work of the technology professionals into a policy discussion is the role that they should be playing. And so it shouldn't take a deciphering of that information. And so I think you're right, it's improved, but I would hope that going forward, that role, and I see Mr. Searle step forward.
I agree wholeheartedly. My job.
And I think, well.
Just to close the loop on that, I completely agree with that. I mean, frankly, I have much better uses of my time than trying to translate IT things into English so that my colleagues can understand them and I can understand them. Equally frustrating was getting items that nobody understood and being asked to approve multiple million-dollar contracts for things that had no board vetting and no understanding of board members. And so if we think we're at a place where the staff communication can be greatly improved in that category, then I'm comfortable moving forward in that direction. It clearly should not be a board's responsibility to do that. But by the same token, who in the room wants to vote on multiple million-dollar contracts without understanding how they're written, how they're set up, how they relate to the overall organization? I mean, a very small function of that committee was simply to ask staff to include an area that says, what is the customer service impact of a technology expenditure? What does it mean to a rider? And as long as we're going to stay consistent with making sure the board has a great understanding of that and the staff has an understanding of preparing these items to come to us, you know, that needs to continue to happen. And, you know, frankly, if it can happen outside of a committee, I'm all for that. But I think it has happened in large part because of our input. I think the staff has heard that loud and clear. My only concern is we had a departure in DIT of a director, and I think we need to be very clear in that department moving forward how things are explained to the board clearly and concisely, and in the accountability parts in here that the language dealing with accountability includes, most importantly in some cases, those items that come from our Department of Information Technology, which are more difficult for us to understand and comprehend.
I would like to just say, in concert with the general manager, that since IT is the main direct responsibility under me and has been this year, we have made some very significant changes, as you know, with the leadership. And we have heard, I do agree with Mr. McKay, that the technology committee has served that purpose in the past. But I think going forward, I do think that it's a benefit to have the whole board understand the very complicated technology decisions that we need to make and do in a very simplistic manner that you can understand. And I'm hoping we have done that in the recent past, and we will continue to do that in the future, because there are very significant changes that actually tie to a lot of the operations that are happening in concert. And you're getting a picture of the operations side on the operations committee. These are very tied together. And if we continue to separate them, you will not have that whole picture. So I pledge to actually bring that to the board with Mr. Searle. Mr. Searle?
I just want to add, I don't know if it will be simplistic, but if I can understand, I'm sure you will understand. And we spend a lot of time doing that these days.
I would observe, though, that there's always a difference between the board's perspective and management's perspective in terms of how we understand it. And so I think it's important. But it sounds like good work has been done. And it sounds like we have consensus to try moving this back into customer service on this particular one. So am I reading that properly? Yes?
Yes.
And I suspect that this needs to be a primary responsibility of this committee of customer service and operations, the overseeing technology and initiative. Overseeing may not be the right word.
And Ms. Hines, in doing that, this has nothing to do with the governance committee, but I do think it's highly appropriate to spend a good chunk of change in closed session in the near term bringing this board entirely up to speed on IT operations. For those of us who have been here for many years, we had a presentation some time ago that dealt with IT infrastructure, and I think we need to spend good time explaining to the board how that's been updated over the years so that people understand where we are from a DIT perspective today.
We might want to share with you, Mr. McKay, the briefing we did get, because maybe you can help them more than we can about what else needs to be in there. So we'll send it to you. Ms. Porter, do you have a...
Have we dealt already with the audit issue?
No.
Okay,
no.
That was my question.
No, we have not. I was trying to say, I think this issue of it getting vetted is important. I could suggest another strategy, which I've also seen used, which is the executive committee of the board operates in that manner rather than a separate committee. And so those people, three people in leadership, are the place that you bounce that first. That's another way to proceed rather than having a separate committee with the understanding that everybody participates in the full review at the end.
Another way to deal with it, if I could
add,
would be you could have, assuming that the Finance Committee is not always a committee of the whole, you could have the Finance Committee as a full committee deal with it in the first pass, and then the second pass would go to the board as a whole. I've also seen organizations do that.
Yeah. Mr. Benjamin, do you have any thought on that?
I think that's fine. There have been a substantial number of items that should not be in open session associated with the audit committee and particularly their investigations. So you may want to go back and take a look at the issue of whether or not committees can meet in closed session and provide the opportunity for some of these things that need to be discussed. Mr. McKay's discussions about some procurement issues that the Technology Review Committee has looked at, and a number of the investigation issues that the Audits and Investigations Committee has looked at, because it does a lot more than just the annual audit, and have a way for if the Finance Committee as a whole does it, or the Finance Committee, hopefully not the board as a whole then, does it, that they could do that in executive session.
And maybe we could get some advice from staff. Ms. O'Keefe on that?
The prohibition against the committee's meeting in executive session is a relatively recent addition to the board's rules of procedure. There's absolutely no impediment whatsoever to having the committees meet in executive session, except the board's decision to do so.
Okay. Perhaps one thing to think about, and we can go back and look at the way that we get into closed session now, the particular things, and we might want to narrow the band which would allow a committee to go into closed session that would pertain particularly to its mission or something like that. So it's not quite as wide open as the full board.
We might want to look at whether the full board should approve a committee having an executive session, which you could do on a blanket basis for the audit committee, but on a case-by-case basis for others. That may be cumbersome, but...
Yeah, since the board meets only once a month, that might be difficult. I don't know, though. I haven't been around long enough to have a sense. I don't know.
It sounds like the suggestion to fairly clearly delineate the issues under which committees can have closed sessions is a good way to start. I have relatively little experience with this, but it sounds on the face of it to be a reasonable way to deal with it.
So shall we proceed? I'm sorry. Ms. Liu.
I'd like to say that certainly when we have the subcommittee on audits and investigation, there are things that are very sensitive relating to investigations. We usually give the audit committee members a heads up if we're going to refer anything to the Department of Justice for criminal prosecution. There also is a board resolution. I think it's board resolution 2008-1 the board has a role in approving the selection of the external auditor to do the financial statement. Before I got here, the board was involved in the interviewing of the various firms and what have you. We would write the, working with the chairman, write the statement of work and review the thing, but it ended up being the board would have to call the various members in and hear their proposal. We made that change in January of 2008, where our office will be responsible for making sure that we get national firms that are qualified. We review their proposals. We have criteria. We have a selection panel. Selection panel is made up of individuals from my office, as well as one individual from the CFO office. We also make arrangements to get panelists from Department of Transportation, Office of Inspector General. Usually it's an individual that's very knowledgeable on single audits and an individual very knowledgeable in overseeing the financial audit of the Department of Transportation. So we have about five members of that panel, and it's chaired by my assistant IG for audits. And after they do the review, they will make recommendations to me, and then we will call the ones that are best qualified to come in, and we will discuss all that, and we will make a selection based on who best value and all that. Then what we did in 2008 is we went to the audit committee, we shared our information with them, and let them know who we recommend that they approve. And once that subcommittee approved, Peter participated in that, that goes as a recommendation to the finance administration. At that time, oversight was part of their title. And if they approve, then they recommend to the full board. That type of discussion and information in the early stages needs to be confidential, because at that time it hasn't been definite that's the one we're going to go with. So that is something you would want to have in closed session along with investigations. By having a subcommittee, I have a responsibility on a quarterly basis to let the board members know the status of open recommendations that our office has made, as well as any investigator matter that is still outstanding. We do that on a quarterly basis. That is something that was required in the board resolution that established our office. Every time we issue a report, we prepare a synopsis and give it to the audit committee so they know what it is, usually before it is put on our website. We also prepare a semi-annual report. Since I've been here, I would say 90% of the time, whatever we give to the audit committee, the chair usually comes back and say, I want you to share this information with the full board. And we do that electronically. And I think each one of you here have received our last quarterly report and our semi-annual report and anything else that we bring to their attention. We also do participate as observers on the technology review subcommittee and share with them any type of information we have based on either audits or investigations in the IT area.
I was going to say, based on that, it sounds as if the responsibilities of the audit committee could be subsumed under the finance committee, because it might, in some cases, save you a step of going first to audit and then to finance.
We only, unlike all the other committees, or subcommittees, or committees, we only have one require meeting, and that is before we go before the Finance and Administration Oversight Committee for approval of the audit deliverables. We brief the audit committee on, we give them a preliminary, and that usually happens after we have had an exit with the general manager, CEO. So they get a heads up. And then after that, you know, follows the regular process. The only other time that we will request a meeting is if something comes up and we feel the board needs to know, the audit committee needs to know. The other thing, everything is sort of like screened through the audit committee. But this way it gives me a connection with someone on the board, as opposed to when I first came here, we did not have an audit committee. They had done away with it prior to my coming here. So I found myself reporting to 12 members, and getting directions from 12 members. So finally that was changed in 2008 that we created this subcommittee.
Much to think about. I mean, I feel like we've heard a couple of different solutions here. So why don't Mrs. Porter and I go back and we'll talk with staff and see if we can propose something to you all that will meet the various needs that people have to have the right connections and the right conversations happen before we go public with these sensitive areas. There's another issue that I think I know where we are, but I want to have an affirmation on this. It is in this section of the bylaws and previously of the procedures where the role of the alternates is most clearly laid out. It's not totally clear, but it just says that all board members, I'm on page 11, under the numbers, it says all board members may attend and participate in committee meetings, and that's been interpreted to mean members, voting members or directors and alternate directors. And my sense from how we have been working and the level of work that we have before us is that we don't have an intention to move away from that, but I would like to check that with everybody before I assume that that's so. Is that a correct reading? So this may be the one thing that was recommended where I think from an operational standpoint we have a different view. Okay, we're good. I just wanted to, Mr. McKay.
I think there needs a little more clarification on that. There is, you know, obviously many have recommended that two different divergent paths, either alternates become voting members or alternates continue to be alternates, but that they don't agree with this section of the bylaws. And I guess we're looking at bylaws. We're not looking at things that require compact changes.
Exactly.
To just be very clear with the public about that, because we may not be able to solve the other issue. In fact, we can't solve the other issue, the issue of whether or not alternates become voting board members or are eliminated entirely. So I'm not sure that in the bylaws for our current operations that we shouldn't clarify this and put, you know, that all board members and alternates may attend and participate in committee meetings for absolute clarity. I mean, there's a difference of opinion as to what's in the bylaws. We can't change the compact. I have my own very strong opinions, as I think many others do, at this board as to what the role of alternates should be. But if they're going to continue to participate in committee meetings, we ought to be explicit about that, in my opinion.
Mr. Benjamin.
Just reflecting on Mr. McKay's comment, I think it's extremely important to treat alternates as board members. So we're talking about principals and alternates. So if you want to say principals and alternates, yeah, but please don't say board members and alternates, because alternates are board members. But on a broader basis, since I won't be here for future discussions on this subject, I believe that there are two directions in which we can go, both of which make some sense, one of which is very difficult for one of the jurisdictions. One is to say, we're going to operate without alternates, and what we're going to do is get rid of alternates entirely, which clearly cuts down the number of members, but makes the voting process and the decision process somewhat easier. The other is to continue pretty much the way we went. I think there's a distinct disadvantage in having a 16-member board or more, with everybody voting on everything. That starts to get really difficult to handle. But if you're going to have an alternate, and if your belief is that the alternate needs to play a meaningful role, it strikes me that the alternate cannot be considered what I thought the Board of Trade was proposing, somebody who shows up only when the principal isn't there and casts the vote that the principal instructed that the alternate give. If that's the case, we can just do proxies and not have to worry about having the alternate at all. As it turns out, we have over the years benefited enormously from many of our alternate members, some of whom have been extremely influential to this board. And so by making them full members of committees and voting members of committees, I think we all benefit an enormous amount. So I think there's a great deal of logic to what we've got, and to expect people to come to meetings and sit there quietly and never say anything until they're asked to vote, and then be really contributors, I think is absurd. To ask them to come in and suddenly take a position when they haven't been to meetings is leading to potential disaster because they don't have the appropriate background. So I think we have an appropriate balance at the present time. We make use of those alternates in very significant ways, where an awful lot of work of this board gets done in the committee meetings, and we empower them then. And when it gets to the official vote, we follow exactly the vote of the board, where a lot of this has already been discussed and we understand the positions of those alternates. We go to the decisions of the principals as the compact calls for it. I think it's a good structure, and I would feel very bad if we moved away from it.
Mr. Brown.
As an alternate, the distinction, though, there's one distinction in this room, and then there's a distinction out there in the community. And there is, and from those folks' standpoint, there is no distinction. You're a board member, you're a board member. And so when my colleagues, like Tommy and I, are out at committee meetings, they don't say, oh, Michael, you're an alternate, you can't talk about Metro. And so from my standpoint, I appreciate what Peter just talked about. It's just making sure that the alternates feel much, very much part of the process, and I certainly have. And I can't speak for other alternates, but as long as alternates, again, in this room, there's an understanding that when we're outside in the community, that word alternate never comes up. I mean, I don't think it's ever come up in any community meeting. I've been in all eight wards around the city related to Metro and issues related to Metro. They still have one accountability from me. They still want answers. And the word alternate doesn't mean much to folks outside of this room or outside of this particular process or sphere.
I kind of agree with all the comments regarding the role that the individuals have played as alternates and what I think comes out of it in terms of the role of the authority, the benefits that come there. I think there is a difference, though, and the difference is that in certain jurisdictions it is so different. That is, the principles come from certain districts, jurisdictions on a different path. And I only look at the Virginia piece, and it has consistently been almost a role of moving up into the leadership, and therefore the role of the alternate has always been important, and because that person is likely to have the larger responsibility of casting that vote. And I think the participation of that has gone on in my time has I think it served its well, and I think even in prior, when there was probably less direct engagement, there was at least a clarity that that person was really as responsible, because if not at the given time, at some given time, they would have a major role to play as the principal. So I think we're at this discussion because maybe in looking at those recommendations that came forward, the absence of the work in the committees is really the hard work. And so you really spend your time in the committees trying to work the issues through, and you get the clarity working really with everyone in order to get the best decision out of that. So I think it's different in some ways, or it's perceived differently in some ways, but I think the comments, I think most of us around the dais here saying that it's an important role, and everyone takes it as an important responsibility.
Can I give one more example?
Sure, Ms. Brown.
When the fare increase happened, and for the elected officials that are on the board, I walked into community meetings. People said, "Michael, why did you vote for the fare increase?" That had, you know, I didn't stand up and say, "Wait, I'm an alternate. I didn't vote." And
it
so,
didn't work.
No, exactly. And so, that's why I just want to illustrate more of the distinction outside of this room related to what happens outside the door.
Mr. McKay.
Yeah,
I think these bylaws give us an opportunity to clarify what actually happens here for the public. I think you're right. Most folks in the public don't know what the role of alternates is and don't know how they fit in. They see a board member, they say board member. But part of the confusion that others may have is because it's not really clearly delineated in the bylaws. And this would be an opportunity for us, at a minimum, every reference to the board, which is all throughout this document that I read, I assume that means applies to all alternates. When I read the board, that means me. And we need to say that right at the beginning of this document somehow. And in fact, under mission, maybe right on page one, you put the WMATA Board of Directors and then defined as all principals and alternates in parentheses or comma, however, furthers, and then everything below that applies to you on this board, whether you're a principal or an alternate, unless it's specified specifically otherwise. Because I, you know, now that, and I didn't want to belabor this conversation, but it goes back to my original point of clarity.
Yes.
And how clear we are with what the responsibilities are, because the other piece of this is, depending on what jurisdiction you're from, and whether or not you're an elected official, an appointed official, it really is immaterial. But there may be variations within the jurisdictions of how they see the role of alternates. And I think we as a board should define ourselves what we see as the role of alternates and put it in this document and make it clear that when we're talking about the board, we're also talking about alternates.
I think that's a great suggestion, Mr. McKay, to put it right in the mission, the definition. I like how you did that. Folks agreed with going ahead and doing that.
Sure.
I think that does provide clarity. Then we don't need to do it in the committee section. We've done it up front, right at the beginning. And I think there is a section where we'll have to go back and make sure we have one sentence that says principals vote and make sure that we have that someplace at board meetings. So we'll have to just make sure that that's clear. Because that's really the only distinction I've experienced is how many of us actually vote. Who can second? How many of us can second a motion? And who can vote? Okay. Thank you. That was wonderful. So, colleagues, other than the questions around the subcommittees, I'm not hearing anybody feeling like we need to parse through the various roles and responsibilities. Ms. Porter.
There's one issue that I never quite knew what the Policy Program Development and Intergovernmental Relations Committee was, and so I very much appreciate the way you've done this matrix. It makes it very clear. But it also makes it clear that that committee actually doesn't do policy. We all do policy. But what it seems to do primarily is planning. And I'm not sure that we ought not to have some committee that's clearly responsible for the kinds of planning tasks that are listed here.
I don't know that. Does anybody know the genesis of the current name, Mr. Benjamin?
Yes, I created it, so I know the
genesis. Well, we should have guessed that.
Actually, there used to be a planning committee once upon a time. There used to be an intergovernmental relations committee, and they were separate committees. At one point, I don't know, we had 8 or 9 or 10 committees. And this was an agglomeration of some of the key characteristics of some of the committees. This had actually disappeared a few years ago and was brought back again 2 years ago. The major areas are the whole long-term development issue, strategic planning, long-term development, program development, that I think is central to the policy-making function of the board and for which there was no real clear committee to do it. Another area was two levels of intergovernmental relations. One is with the federal government. Very often people said, what is Metro's position on the current authorization before the Congress? And this was the forum in which that occurs, and this was to be the place that those broad policy issues that relate to our relationship with other governments, particularly the federal government, but also the local and the state governments, were to be worked out. And so if we had agreements that we had to do that were broad agreements with any of those levels, this was the committee that would do it. So it had gone away and it came back again, but it came back instead of separate committees in one agglomeration to try and keep the number of committees down.
Well, I very much agree with what you just said about combining committees, and I certainly think the planning function and the intergovernmental function are appropriately housed in the same place, since a lot of the intergovernmental functions do relate to longer-term planning. So I think that's appropriate. I'm just wondering if we could do something in terms of presenting it. My concern when I looked at it wasn't that it's not doing the right thing, but it's not clear. It's not immediately understandable. And from your description, it sounds like you inherited pieces of names that you needed to make clear that this committee followed old committees with certain names. So I'm wondering if maybe now that this committee is established, whether we can come up with a name that clarifies its function.
Sure. Mr. Yeah. I mean, it seemed to me several of the other committees also do policy.
Right.
The policy is not, I misunderstood it for a long time, but I thought that this committee had unique responsibility for policy. And I think there's a difference between foreign policy and domestic policy. But, you know, for example, in the Finance Committee, there are reference to guidance, which I think is probably not strong enough. There are many cases where there will be policy issues there. So maybe it should just disappear out of the unique title.
I think maybe one thought I would have is that we go back and look at your chart, which is very good, and try and determine if we need all of these. Because I think, as I've looked at them, there are key things that we must do, and there are committee structures around those key things. And I think defining those committees, and then trying to determine what role the others play. Do they deserve a committee? Do they deserve some other structure that allows us to have the kind of discussion and debate? And we've just had the discussion about increasing committees, but I think your chart really gives us an opportunity to try and put this in a much more concise piece of what committees we really need by the definitions that you think.
Mr. Costa.
I also think there's a issue, too, in terms of whether we're going to continue as a committee of a whole on every committee, or we're going to use subcommittees in a more constructive way and maybe have fewer committees and actually have some, you know, if they're less critical, you know, pieces of work, or if they're more long-term pieces of work, those might be taken up in subcommittees where a group of people can kind of work through and then report back up. So you might want to look at the organization first and then talk about where the pieces fall, you know, and I think that might be a more constructive way to do this.
Well, and that there's an attempt here to kind of gather up those key things and do that. The other thing I would say is I think this issue of the committee of the whole is another question. I think given the number of us who are new and the learning curve that we're all on, it's incredibly helpful for us all to be welcome and be able to participate, and I think probably the expectation right now of that is a good one. I could also envision years when you're working on a particular thing and a committee really does need to be committee of the whole time, in which case you might consider moving it into a work session format. Right. So that the chairman keeps chairing, and it's just viewed that way. There also might be times when five members is a great plenty. So I think we need to kind of think about membership as that's part of how we define the actual participating membership is part of the procedures, and that the bylaws should be written somewhat permissively so that you can be from five members to a committee of the whole, depending on the needs of the board or the needs of the agency at a particular time. Doesn't mean we don't have to get this part clear about what we're doing in these various places, but I do think we should at least be willing to talk about that too. Mr. Benjamin.
This hasn't been an issue for me because I think I attend just about every meeting that occurs, but the Maryland members who follow me, some of whom are sitting there and one of whom is sitting there, are going to be faced with a requirement to report to the governor which meetings they did or did not attend. And if you are, if every committee is a committee of the whole, anytime they don't attend any committee meeting, they're reporting that to the governor. I think what we want to do is make it reasonable for people to be able to be full participants in anything, but not have to go to everything. And by setting up committees where a smaller number of people are designated to actually do the work, it allows particularly people with very busy schedules to figure out which ones they absolutely have to go to, which ones they would like to go to, and which ones they can afford not to go to. So it's one of the other rather practical reasons why you may want to have committees that are smaller and work in a very dedicated fashion on certain issues and then bring that to the board as a whole to discuss. It also makes these meetings more interesting because it becomes the time that the committee report is something other than the committee of the whole having met as a committee in the other room comes in here and says yes to what it just did in the other room.
So we're at our time. Ms. Hudgens, I think your suggestion is everybody go back and look at this again with an eye toward what are our key activities as the board. Do we have them spread around appropriately? And then we can maybe take a look at this question of fewer committees the next time we get together. I believe, Ms. O'Keefe, do you remember what do you remember what our item is at our next week that we're discussing? Is it communication? Ms. Hines? It is on the last page of the package you have.
Oh, it's thank you.
It's meetings.
There we go.
It looks like it's meetings.
Oh, yeah. Meetings. No, it's bylaws. Our next meeting, we are going to go back through the draft document that we were working on the sections of today. Staff took many, many notes the first pass through we made. And so what you have is a red line version and with some highlights about language staff recommends we move to various places. We will not do board or chair or this section that we just worked through a little bit today on committees, but we will look at the other sections and try to sign off on as many of those sections as we can. So I don't know, we had hoped maybe we would have the draft for the board CEO interrelationship for this next go-through for Article 6, if you guys have a chance to write that. That was the question. But that's the game, that is the game plan. Mr. Don.
Yeah, I have several specific comments on the committee things, which I'll get to you this week.
Excellent. And anybody who wants to send comments ahead, I do think that really helps us organize our time. And then we will circle back on the committee stuff probably at the meeting after next week. Okay? Does that make sense? All right. Thank you all very much. We're done.